Blog Talk Radio.
Yourself in danger when you're threatened by a stranger, when it looks like you will take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program, and editor-in-chief of Chicken Whisperer magazine. Today is Monday, March 10th, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, I welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to visit our website, chickenwhisperer.com, where you can follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in today to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by Tractor Supply.
When you need an incubator, think Brensea, the incubation specialist. Brensea has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensea.com. Brensea spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensea.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensea, technology you can trust.
You've just entered a dimension of dirty water, a dimension of poop-filled water, a dimension of stagnant water. You've crossed into the Dirty Waterer Zone. But up ahead is your signpost to cleaner water, the Brightap Chicken Waterer. The Brightap Waterer is fully covered. Chickens drink from special valves, so dirt and droppings can't get into the water. Chickens get sparkling clean water. You get less work. No poop-filled water pans for you to touch or wash out. Brightap, clean water made simple. Visit chickenwaterer.com to learn more. That's chickenwaterer.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Do you provide a heat source for your backyard chickens in the winter? In most cases, it's not necessary. But if you choose to provide a heat source for your backyard chickens, it's imperative to use a safe and effective heat source, and the only one I recommend is the Sweeter Heater. The Sweeter Heater is a safe, completely sealed, washable, non-breakable, energy-efficient, long-lasting and reliable specific area heater that comes with a 3-year warranty. Ditch the dangerous heat lamp this season and invest in the only heater I recommend, the Sweeter Heater. Purchase the Sweeter Heater online at SweeterHeater.com. That's SweeterHeater.com.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All righty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. I hope you're having a great Monday. It is Monday. But no fret, you woke up this morning, didn't see dirt, so that's a good thing, right? That's what my dad always says. I call him up, how you doing today, Pops? Well, I woke up and didn't see dirt, so I guess I'm doing all right. Gotta love him, he's 83. So hope my sound's coming in loud and clear. When I bring on Peter Brown, the chicken doctor, I'll put myself on mute. I am outside right now sitting at a beautiful concrete picnic table in beautiful Stone Mountain Park in just outside of Atlanta, Georgia. We are basically, this is home base until Wednesday morning. And we hit the road on the Power to the Poultry Spring 2014 book tour with Tractor Supply Company. It is a book tour and a speaking tour all across the country. We're really looking forward to that. I've been posting the dates on our Facebook page. Hopefully we're coming to a town near you. I can't remember all the towns off the top of my head, but I know we're going. We've got events in Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, Oklahoma, Kansas, Missouri, Indiana, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Georgia. How cool is that? So I'm actually in a rental right now. We've rented a minivan. I don't ever consider myself as a minivan type of guy, but it was available at the rental place this morning. We woke up, and I took the SUV in for some routine maintenance. It is that time of year again, and I basically do everything possible to it. I rely on that vehicle with my family, my 2-year-old, my 1-year-old, my wife, and I when we're out traveling around the country putting bukus of miles on it. So I'm a firm believer in preventative maintenance. But I think this is a Chrysler Town and Country or something, but it's not bad for a minivan. I do like the easy access. Both the back doors kind of open up real wide, so getting the car seat in and out, the kids in and out, that's kind of convenient. I think the back lift gate, I hadn't figured it out yet. When I tried to figure it out, I just heard a motor run. I don't know if I was doing something wrong. I think it opens and closes automatically by itself. But nonetheless, I have it until tomorrow afternoon. Hopefully they'll get all the maintenance done on my vehicle today and tomorrow, and I'll get rid of this minivan. Like I said, I'm not really a minivan type of guy, but it was satisfactory. So, but just 2 days before I get the old SUV back and we hit the road. So we got a great show lined up for you today. We're talking about bursal disease with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. We say if they don't have it, you don't need it. Again, that's FirstStateVetSupply.com. Cool thing about Peter Brown and his establishment there is when you order something, it's going to come with directions. Real directions for your backyard flock. If you have 6 chickens and that packet of whatever you bought says mix in 800 gallons of water, don't fret. You don't need to have an 800-gallon container. It tells you how to mix it, how often to give it the whole 9 yards for your backyard chickens. Not a commercial operation, but your backyard chickens. You're not going to get that anywhere else, folks. So we definitely have a great show lined up for you today. Visit our Facebook page for all the updates about the tour. Hopefully you can make it to an event. I'd love to meet you. Love to see you. We'll be doing book autographs. I have my magazines with me that are out. I'll be autographing those, I'm sure, for a lot of folks. Everybody that attends gets a free print edition on the tour. We're going to be stopping by Ideal Poultry in Cameron, Texas. We're stopping by Crazy K Farm in Hempstead, Texas. We're going to try to stop by UrbanCoopCompany.com there. They're in just outside of Austin. And, of course, we're all the events will be here to the held at the Tractor Supply. So check us out on Facebook. It's facebook.com/TheChickenWhisperer. You can get all the kind of updates about our tour. We got an awesome coop contest going right now with wooden-wonders.com. You want to check them out. They've got some of the most unique chicken coops on the market. In fact, there is a snippet on their homepage from today's guest, Peter Brown, the chicken doctor. He saw these coops in action at a poultry show within about 6 weeks ago, And he really likes the coops, the quality craftsmanship of them, the design of them. And there is a snippet, a quote from Peter Brown on their website. But they're the makers of the famous Hobbit Hole chicken coops, and we're giving one of those away. Includes the Hobbit Hole Lightfoot coop. It includes shipping anywhere in the lower 48 states. It includes a removable and cleanable coop liner, floor liner. It also, yesterday, we added a chicken fountain, chicken water to the grand prize package. We'll be adding prizes throughout the month. Let me tell you real quick how to enter. If you're not going to get on our Facebook page anytime soon, we'll get right to Peter Brown. You need to send me an email, like the other contests in February and in January. But you can send me an email to contest@chickenwhisperer.com. That's where you're going to send this email, contest@chickenwhisperer.com. Okay? In the subject line of that email, you're going to type in coop contest. Down in the email itself, I need your name, your shipping address, and your phone number. And then hit send. It's that easy. One entry per person per email address. So if you have 4,000 members in your family, they can all enter, but they all have to have a separate and different email address. How simple is that? Your whole subdivision can enter, and if they don't want chickens, fine. They can shift the coop to you if they win. But everybody that enters has to have a separate email address. Okay, so that's how that works. Yes, you can enter if you live in Japan. You're just going to have to arrange shipment from a port here in the U.S. You can enter if you live in Canada, and you can have all these goodies shipped to a border town. You can cross the border and pick everything up and take it home. If you want to order from Europe, that is perfectly fine. Not order, but if you want to participate, if you want to enter this contest and you live in Europe, go right ahead. I will ship all these prizes to a port over on the East Coast. You can row your boat right over and pick it up and row it right back. I have no problems with that. So you can enter no matter where you live. But I'm only going to ship the packages into the lower 48 states. How you get them home from there is your business. So, gotta love it. So I hope you enter that contest. We're going to have a contest in April and May and June, giving away chicken coops and tons of great prizes. So no worries about that. Yes, the magazine is coming out. It's already gone to printers. If you signed up for the digital edition, which is free, then how cool is that? Free, awesome information from experts around the country. It should be entering your email probably in the next 10 days. If you have the print subscription, it may be in your mailbox in the next 10 days. I would say give it maybe 3 weeks because they do go out third-class mail. But nonetheless, if you subscribed, you can figure out how to do that at our Facebook page and on Twitter and on my website too, chickenwhisperer.com. You can figure out how to subscribe to both the free digital edition and the print edition. 1 year subscription, $9.95. Come on, but I guarantee you'll learn more than $9.95 in just the first issue from our expert contributors, guaranteed. So gotta love it. Okay, let's get right over here to the phone lines. We have Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply, going to be talking about infectious bursal disease. And let's give him a good Chicken Whisperer welcome. Hey, Peter, how you doing, buddy?
All right, Andy, how are you?
I'm hanging in there. It's a little chilly, it's a little nippy with the wind, but those folks that have 2 feet on the snow, like they were saying in the chat room, 2 feet of snow on the ground, let me tell you, I feel for you, but it's beautiful. It's going to be 70 degrees today, not a cloud in the sky. I said, I'll do the show from the picnic table outside the RV. I'm trying to get my camera to work. Got to contact Blog Talk and here and help support and try to get my camera. I don't often do video, but since I'm going on the road, there's been a glitch in the system, and I can't pull it up, so I'm trying to get the live video broadcast up here running during this episode. And I'm also, Peter, going to put myself on mute. It is a little breezy, and I know that with broadcasting with the mic, it sometimes can create a little wind noise, so I'm going to put myself on mute. So if you do at any time ask me a question or anything, it may take about 4 seconds for me to unmute myself to come back on, but I'll be listening and paying attention because this is something that, in fact, we're going to have a big article about this in the summer edition of Chicken Whisperer magazine. So this is a good head start and a good heads up for people. I think you mentioned in the email to me that you're dealing with this right now somewhere in the country. So I'm going to turn it over to you, my friend, and we'll talk about infectious bursal disease. Thank you very much for coming on today, my friend.
Sure. Yeah, Gumboro disease has been around for quite some years. At the end of the day, it technically is nothing new. What is new is the introduction to poultry flocks here in this country of a more virulent type of Gumboro virus. And so I'll start with basically trying to explain as best I can just what it is. Number one, it's a virus. It was first, the Gumboro disease itself was first recognized as early as the early 1960s. I was later involved with an individual, Dr. Al Cosgrove, who published the first papers describing the disease and what they were seeing right around 1962. Al and I were real good friends. He later got out of the poultry business and went into a private practice for cats and dogs. It was his overall passion. And but he was the first person, to my knowledge, to have written papers and worked with this particular disease. At the time, they didn't really know that it was a disease that was immunosuppressive. So what we're talking about here, basically, and I know people within the poultry industry don't like it, but technically what you have is a chicken AIDS type situation. The virus is not the same as the human AIDS virus, but does the same basic thing in a chicken that the human virus does to a human, and that is that it renders the immune system useless or helpless in most cases. With chickens, it's a little bit different, and we'll go into all those things here. But it is an immune system suppressing virus. First really discovered back in the 60s, written about by Dr. Cosgrove in around 1962 or so. And most of the information that I've gotten over the years were from individuals like him. And most of this information that I'm talking about here today is information that I got in personal communications and various conversations. He only had an office and stuff about 20 miles from where I'm speaking to you. So I was a frequent visitor to his office picked his brain on a lot of the ins and outs of this. But originally they thought this was a problem with kidney nephrosis, which is problem with the kidneys of the bird, that's what he called it, avian nephrosis in the beginning, because upon the post-mortem examination of the carcass of birds that were affected with this disease, they would see a lot of kidney lesions and so on. But he did observe in these birds the swelling of the main target organ of this disease, which is the bursa fabricius, and the last word is spelled F-A-B-R-I-C-I-U-S. It is the organ, along with the thymus gland in the bird, that is responsible for producing all of the B and T cells for the immune system. So you can just imagine when the bird is under attack from the Gumboro virus, this virus has an affinity for this particular organ, the bursa fabricius. It'll settle down in that organ and start to destroy it. The difference at this point between the normal Gumboro viruses that we have seen here in the U.S. since the 60s, this newer one, this virulent or very, very virulent one that's coming into the country now, it's been around in this country for at least 6 to 7 years. Started out in California, was confined basically to central and northern California, and had been detected in some commercial flocks as well as some backyard and fancy type flocks. But it didn't seem to be moving out of that state, and what prompted this show to be done here today was that I was approached by a friend of mine who lives in an area where this is at least lives in the state where this has now jumped to, which is the state of Washington, and that is alarming. It's alarming for a number of reasons. This disease is not easily defended against. This disease is not easily gotten rid of. It is very, very difficult, if not almost impossible, to clean a farm up once it's become contaminated with this particular virus, especially these virulent ones. But at any point, to give you an example, if this were so easy to control or so easy to clean up, this was discovered in the 60s. We're now some 50 years removed from that time frame, and we're still dealing with it. The commercial poultry industry spends billions every year trying to control this disease through vaccination, and in many cases there are variant strains coming out all the time. And as I've told folks before in the in various programs that we've done on the show in relation to viruses and other disease organisms, they all want to live, all of them. And they all have a workaround or a methodology to get around the current vaccines and so on. And no virus population is basically pure, at least in the wild. And when you hold down the dominant virus, that allows other viruses within that subgroup to come to the surface, and then they become the variants or the next one that's going to cause more difficulty or override a vaccine or something like that. So the vaccines that they're using today are much removed and different from the vaccines that they used years ago. But at any rate, there is a vaccine available for this particular disease. And we'll go into some of the rhyme and reason behind that type of an approach later on. But this disease, again, attacks the immune system. The immune system is the backbone of the bird. Without the immune system, you're not going anywhere. Some of the symptoms that you might see with this particular disease might get you to think that this is a problem that would be associated with coccidiosis. And the reason I say that is that one of the first symptoms you'll see is birds being lethargic, lazy, standing around, droopy wings. One of the tip-offs to this is that you will see birds with a white diarrhea that's nonstop. And you can see some vent picking by birds. Birds will start to pick at these birds' vents. I'm not sure exactly what drives them to do that. But at any rate, these are some of the symptoms that you'll see, and they do mimic, except for the white diarrhea, they do mimic very closely the coccidiosis type of symptoms. So it's very easy to look out over a flock of birds and look at these birds and decide for yourself that what you're seeing is coccidiosis. You've seen it before. You treat them for coccidiosis, but they don't get any better. They continue to go downhill. They wither away to practically nothing. And you know, mortality can be all over the place from high to low. Depends on the age at which the bird has become infected. So what you're going to see with this here is the lethargy in the birds, the vent picking, the white diarrhea. The diarrhea can stick to the feathers pretty good, and becomes a problem. For those that are interested in knowing where this disease where the organ that is affected by this disease is located, the bursa fibrosis is located at the tail end of the intestine in a bird that still had its bursa intact. You would, with a gloved finger on a bird that's been euthanized, insert your finger into the vent, push upward towards the oil gland, and gently cut down through the oil gland, and you'll pop the bursa fibrosis out. And there are various things that you would look for, swelling of the bursa, you would look for streaks of blood and the swelling in the absence of the folds. If you look at the bursa, it has a bunch of folds inside of it. It's the easiest way to explain it. But at any rate, you would look for damage to this. Prior to this, you would probably have done some blood work and picked up the virus or the antibodies in the blood, which would have told you that that there is an issue going on with this particular disease. Some of the testing that they're doing today is much more expensive than some of the testing that they used to do, and this type of testing makes it almost impossible for the small flock holder to get this kind of testing done on any kind of regular basis. And we will go into that a little bit more in the latter part of this conversation. But just know that the bursa lies at the very tail end of the intestine of the bird. A unique thing about the bursa, the earlier the bird is infected, the greater the damage as a general rule. Okay.
Hey, Peter, real quick question, because I forget as we go on. I just want to get myself off mute here and ask this question. So if, and maybe you with your thought process, someone calls in or someone's seeing these symptoms, and which may be so common to coccidiosis, is it would the first line for them to be treat as coccidiosis? And you may have said that while I was working with tech support here getting the video up. But and then if it doesn't help, we go to this. Is the best thing to try to get a blood test to see what it is? And just what is there a process of elimination to figure out it is this versus, say, coccidiosis? Or we just start, and if it doesn't work, we go to the next option and the next option?
Yeah, in the world that I basically play in, and most people who are raising fancy birds and small flocks of backyard chickens, small flock holders, we basically go by the symptomology that a bird presents to us, and then we decide which way we're going to go after the first type of a treatment. So, yeah, you would, in my opinion, you would go for the coccidiosis treatment, and I'll tell you why. This is not a
more
disease.
Common.
Yeah. The cocci is more common. This disease is not common, to my knowledge. In chickens, and I shouldn't say chickens. In the backyard, small flock holder, for instance, Gumboro disease was discovered. Okay, as you might have figured out, if I know Dr. Al Cosgrove, he lived 20 miles from me, but about 30 miles from me is where the first farm was picked up as being infected with this virus some 50-some-odd years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And the disease is still around, and it's in commercial birds. The people that I am associated here with in my own the Delmarva Feather Fanciers Club here for fancy chickens that show birds, okay, don't have a problem with it at all, but it's all around them, and every poultry house here is vaccinated for Gumboro disease multiple times. So, it's here, and it is predominantly at this moment, at least other than California and the state of Washington at this point, it is a commercial bird problem. But I can see that now that this has made its way to Washington, this can be a huge problem. The way birds are swapped around from one breeder to another, birds being sold all over the place from eBay to Facebook to Craigslist to this list to that list and everything else, and
local
herein lies the biggest problem that I've always, and I've said this before on this show, and I'll continue to say it because it is the truth. If we want to help control these diseases, and we really want to help control these things so that they don't jump to the commercial poultry industry, because let's face it, the commercial poultry industry nationwide in this country is huge, number one. Number two, it's a major source of food for this country and other places in the world. Number three, the amount of people that are involved, not just working on the farms and working for the poultry companies,
yeah,
but all of the different feed entities and, Purina and all of the different people that sell feed and sell waterers and all the paraphernalia that goes with this. It's huge. So we'd be smart to try to protect that. There isn't any question about that. But when it comes down
to... And like you always say, dead and sick birds don't pay bills.
No, they don't. They don't. I mean, you can dream about it all you want, but we don't get any help from the governmental side, state or federal, because the testing is so exorbitantly expensive. And, years ago, you used to be able to get it done, real cheap, if not for nothing. But now, these days, the amount of money that they're charging, I mean, just to get a simple PCR test done these days, a minimum of $75.
Mm-hmm.
And in this case, I mean, if you're trying to decide if flock has the problem, I mean, certainly you could run... You could get them to pool some samples together from five or six birds or whatever, and run the test, one test for that $75, but you won't know really how deep it is in your flock. And right. We used to use, and they, I'm sure they still use it in some laboratories, and maybe even they use it as a screening device for themselves. The ELISA test, the enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay test, and you know they're much cheaper to run, take longer to run them, the kit, they come as a kit, and you know, there's all kinds of stuff that goes with the kit and so on, and there's a lot of, I forget how many wells are in each plate that comes with the kit, but maybe a couple hundred, 180 something along those lines. And they're not going to run, they're not going to use that plate and run it for 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 samples, which, you know, on one hand makes sense, but on the other hand, we don't have any method for determining these things. I was listening to somebody speak not too long ago, and they said, well, you know the source from where you buy your eggs and where you buy your chickens and, you know, what kind of disease problems they have in their flock, what kind of blood work have they done. What blood work? Not going to do it. Not going to do it. The smartest thing anybody could do is to take a flock, blood test it for all the known reasonable pathogens that are going to be out there. Okay, let's just say for argument's sake, Newcastle, bronchitis, mycoplasma, and now this gumboro just for those, that group. That would be a tremendous thing to have that and say to somebody, hey, we test our flock once a year. On January 1st of this year, they were free of all of these diseases, and that's all I can tell you. That's better than what we're getting now. I mean, you've heard me say it before. If you go run by somebody's place and you're going to buy birds there, and that place doesn't look as good or better than yours, keep driving. Keep driving. I can't tell you how many times I've dealt with people on Facebook that have bought a bird from this person, that person, and I don't care who the breeder is. I don't care. Almost all of them have some sort of issue with birds of one description or another. And the only way you're ever going to know that is if somebody presents a certificate to you to tell you that, you know, their birds have been tested and they're free of these particular diseases, and, you know, can you go on with it? And it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, but you know, the issue with that, and I never discount anything that any breeder can do, backyard, commercial, whatever, that can help show the purchaser they're on the right track, they're doing the right things, using everything available to them to make sure their flock is healthy for you, the buyer. But somebody can come out tomorrow and check that flock and everything be fine, and 10 minutes after that dude leaves, they get infected somehow.
On the other side of that is that, you know, we've preached this, Bridget's preached it, you've preached it, the government preaches it, the biosecurity end of it is extremely important.
Right.
You know, and if you are testing and you have a good, solid biosecurity program in place where, you know, nobody's coming on your farm and all of these different things, you can avoid these things. I mean, the odds of it happening the other way around are going to be slim to none, whereas if you don't have a biosecurity program in place and you've got this certificate, to me it means nothing. I've said that to you before.
Right.
And I do agree with you on that aspect of it. I do agree with you. But if you have a good biosecurity program in place,
right,
and you have documentation to prove, I'd rather buy from you than somebody that's got none.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Use those tools, and it also shows them that they're wanting to do everything that's available to make sure you get a healthy bird. Alexandra Douglas with Stellar Game Birds down in Florida, she practices the biosecurity, and she'll have you come to her driveway, and that's it. She will not let you go back, and you can handpick your birds. What happens is she gathers a box full or whatever, and then she brings them to you at the end of her driveway on the edge of her property. And so I know a lot of people that would look at that and think that, oh, well, she's hiding something, or why can't I go back there and pick my own? Why can't I go back, you know, that type of thing. And then she says, biosecurity, I do not want you back there. I don't care, period. This is the way. So a lot of people may frown upon that, thinking what she's trying to hide, what she's trying to do. And really, in this case, it's, okay, she's doing the right thing. She cares about her birds, cares about the health of these birds that she's selling me, because she's implementing some biosecurity procedures here on her farm.
Right.
So, but a lot of people would instantly, the flags would go up, why can't I go back there and pick them myself? I will bring them to you. You can choose from what I bring you because of biosecurity. So it's, and that's a perfect example, and I'm glad to share it on the show because now somebody who when that happens to won't be like, oh, they're trying to pull a fast one on me or something's wrong back there and she doesn't want me to see it because of this, that, or the other. But it's a biosecurity issue.
Yeah. Well, look, I'll just share this with you. I think it could because I think it's funny and I think it fits in here. You know, I go to the hospital every morning to do my workout routine there in the cardio rehab unit, and they have people that work there, obviously, that in the evening time when the place is not busy and that part of the unit is closed, they do their cleanup, you know, and that kind of thing. And, you know, so you wonder why things happen. You know, somebody said to me the other day, the worst place to be is in a hospital and be sick. that's really true because, you know, there are so many problems that you run into, and I'll tell you, it's all about housekeeping. It's all about people washing their hands. You know, when you're in that kind of an environment, you know, so I'll share with you this. I thought it was kind of funny, but not so funny at the same time. And I don't shower there. I don't touch nothing there. Okay, if I don't have paper towel in my hand or whatever, I'm not touching it. But anyway, behind the door in the men's bathroom, there was a button laid in the corner of the floor for about a month before it disappeared. So if that floor is being swept the way it's supposed to be and being mopped every night the way it's supposed to be, okay, one would expect the button to be gone in short order. Not so. But I just, you know, I figured, what the hell, let's see what happens. And lo and behold, about 3 or 4 weeks later, the button was gone. So somebody either needed a button or somebody ended up doing their job. So it makes you wonder, did they sweep the floor every night or they just do it when they feel like it? You know, and it's all relevant at the end of the day. If there was better cleanup, better diligence about the job, then people would do a better job of taking care of things. You know, years ago here, when they had vaccination crews going out, I listened to a supervisor of a large poultry concern here because they wanted me to give a dissertation on some rodent control techniques and so on, and so that's why I was there. And then, but he was giving these people the rah-rah of going out and doing their job of vaccinating birds in the field, okay? And all he did was bedam and belittle the job, tell them how stinky it was, and they're on the lower end of the totem pole, and not one word about how important that job is to the outcome of these birds when they go through the processing plant, and that depends on the company making a profit or not making a profit, how many birds get condemned. Not a word, not one word, but every word about how bad this job was, and, you know, you're not getting paid a lot of money because this is a lower totem pole job, blah, 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 blah. To me, as a supervisor, he wasn't worth very much because he just dejected this whole crew that's supposed to go out there and do its best. And I think that's lacking in a lot of places, but, you know, that's the world we live in these days. So,
but, you shared that with us before, that same story. I remember you sharing that with us. It makes a lot of sense. It sure does.
Yep. And, you know, instead of going out to say, look, you know, you guys have the most important job in this company, believe it or not, more so than the CEO, more so than the owner, more so than anybody else in this company, because what you do and how well you do it depends on how well these birds come out at the end of the day, 6 weeks from now, through the processing plant, and how much money this company will either lose or make, one or the other.
Yep. Yep. You know,
instead, they took all the wind out of the sails, and then everybody goes out and they do a lousy job. Because I was just told it was a lousy job, so why should I bother doing a good job? So biosecurity,
right.
Yeah, biosecurity means a lot. It just depends on how you approach it. I think with this particular disease, I think that people need to be extremely diligent where they're buying their birds from. We said it before, we'll continue to say it. It's very, very important. You just don't know what you're buying today. I have my doubts about certain breeds that I see coming in from different countries, and I look up the country where the bird's supposed to have come from and see that it's on the quarantine list for avian influenza, no birds and or no live birds, no eggs are supposed to be imported from those particular countries. And then you see, you know, these particular birds. Now, I can't say when they came in. They might have come in before the quarantine. Who knows? I know people, not directly but indirectly, that claim that they've brought eggs in and didn't go through the proper procedures and this and that and the other thing. And this can be how some of these things get started.
Dave, got a question in the chat room.
Sure.
Pips and Peeps wants to know, does it transfer through the egg? Can an adult bird carry it back to a flock, say via poultry show, and then infect chicks from, say, when they lay and then you incubate it, they lay and they hatch out the chicks?
Tremendous question. We were going to answer that anyway without the question.
I'm sure you were, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, to my knowledge, as I sit here right now, it doesn't pass through the egg. What does pass through the egg is the maternal antibodies if a bird were vaccinated, okay? This is a very hardy virus, extremely hardy, okay? And, of course, things could change, and I don't know everything, don't see everything. Nobody reports to me and tells me all the little ins and outs and stuff, but from what I remember and what I know, basically, there were only two disinfectants at the time that were capable of taking care of this virus, and one was formaldehyde, and the other is an organic iodine at extremely high concentrations. Okay, and this virus can live very well outside the bird's body. Okay. And it has no viral envelope surrounding it, and that's what makes it hardy because most of these disinfectants work by deactivating the viral envelope. So not having one, kind of like what we said with mycoplasma, not having a cell wall, and then using penicillin and thinking we've cured it, can't work because the penicillin works by destroying the cell wall. So the same type of an approach here. This disease, a virus, very, very hardy. I could see it being on a bird's feathers and possibly being transferred. Don't know that for sure, but it would seem to me that that would be one of the ways it would spread. The interesting part about this is, we'll go back to looking at the Bursa fabricius itself, okay? As the bird matures, the Bursa dissipates. Once all of the B and T cells are produced and everything else, so this is going to take place somewhere out around 14, 15 weeks of age. The Bursa will disappear, and there won't be any target organ. Birds would still be infected, and to my knowledge, would still be able to pass the virus on. Okay? So those birds could still be infectious and go to a show and possibly, or any place. I mean, this stuff's got to be coming from somewhere. If this is on a commercial farm, you have to step back and you have to say, okay, how did it get on this commercial farm? Because I don't know of any commercial farm anywhere in this country that doesn't vaccinate for Gumboro disease in one way, shape, form, or another. So how did it get on this farm if these birds were vaccinated? Okay, so most commercial operations don't allow you to run around in their chicken houses. So then my second guess on this thing was it had to be somebody who either has game chickens or has fancy chickens or has layers of their own, or something along those lines, who had the problem and brought it onto that farm. Had to. The only way it could get there. So, you know, there's no evidence that I'm aware of that this is spread by rodents and other wild animals. I don't always buy into the free-flying bird thing all the time. Most of your laying-type birds, which this seems to have a greater affinity for than it does broiler chickens, and that may be because of the short life of the broiler, number one, but number two, the broiler people really do, most of them anyway, do a bang-up job of vaccinating because it's extremely important. And birds that have the disease just become very unthrifty. They bruise very easily. So you can just imagine trying to put a bird with that's been infected with Gumboro disease through a feather picker. They would be beat to death from a standpoint of bruises everywhere, and it would be unmarketable. So this has a lasting impact on the commercial poultry industry and anybody that's associated with it. I mean, it's just you know, I don't know what they're going to do with this flock of birds out in Washington State. From what I understand, it was a fancy flock of birds. And certainly, they're not going to be showing, but that's not the point. Are they going to make them put them all down? What are they going to do with them? You know, I haven't seen anything to say what's going to happen there. And it's already been in some commercial flocks. So with the BRRSA being dissipated, if a bird is infected, and pardon the pun, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 weeks, no harm, no foul. And that's because the target organ is not there any longer, and the immune system won't be affected. Okay? So hopefully that answers most of that question. And then we, you know, prevention is not let any birds in. And for people who are constantly swapping birds over time, this is going to become a problem. Maybe not so much here on the East Coast, in the middle of the country, but I think if I were in California, the state of Washington now, I'd be very careful where I bought birds, and I would think that I would want to look at getting these birds, anything coming in, tested before they hit my place. I would certainly want to do that. And I think if you look around, there might be some places that you can get some ELISA tests run fairly inexpensively, and just see what you can see before you get them in. Because, see, an improperly vaccinated bird is just as vulnerable as a bird that's not vaccinated. Are you going to stop at the top of the hour, Andy? It's 12:55 by my watch.
I will. Yeah, is this a good time? It's up to you.
Yeah, why don't we do that? What I'll do is I'll come back and explain maternal antibodies and all that kind of stuff and go on to vaccination, and we can call it a day.
Okay, no worries. Appreciate the update. All right, folks, we're talking with Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, owner of FirstStateVetSupply.com. We're talking about infectious bursal disease today. There's a lot more to come. Hopefully you've got your Chicken Whisperer notebooks out taking lots of notes. And don't worry, if you joined us late, it's not a big deal. Every single show is archived for your listening pleasure 24/7 at iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and right here at BlogTalkRadio.com. How cool is that? So stay with us. We'll be back after this short commercial break from our sponsors.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer. If you're in the market for a new incubator, then look no further than GQF. They have a great selection of tabletop and cabinet-style incubators at prices you can afford. I love my GQF Genesis Model 1588. It has a large picture window and an automatic thermostat, which makes for a better hatch every time. Go pick out your new incubator at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com. Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at mounthealthy.com. That's mthealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
All right, everybody, thank you very much for staying with us today. I clicked on the wrong button, so it's going to have to give me a second to get the switchboard back up. It disappeared. So I know Peter's on hold, and let me get back over here and open up my studio, and I can get to my switchboard, and Peter is on hold. There you go. That didn't take too long. It's amazing when you have a computer with not a lot of junk on it and a fast connection, how quick that can be. So we're talking with Peter Brown, also known as Chicken Doctor, founder of First State Vet Supply, infectious bursal disease today. And carry on. Peter, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah, so the way to control, a disease, if I were in a position where I was surrounded by, other people who were rearing chickens of the same type or whatever that I had, or just plain chickens, and there were problems in the area, I might consider a vaccination program. And the vaccination program with this particular disease doesn't start with the progeny; it starts with the breeders, and it's basically a two-pronged approach where the breeding stock would be vaccinated with a live Gumboro disease vaccine, and then later on would come back with a inactivated or killed vaccine for a Gumboro vaccine as a booster to get the maternal antibody levels that the dam is going to pass on through the egg to the offspring. Here lies part of the problem for not only commercial poultry people, but for a small flock backyard holder type of an operation. Number one is the cost. The vaccines, the live vaccines, not overly expensive. The killed vaccines are, all killed vaccines are generally a lot more money. It's due to the makeup of the vaccine and the technology that goes into it. But at any rate, they are more expensive. So you have the overall expense of doing this. Some of the killed vaccines cause swelling at the injection site, whether it be a bursal vaccine or mycoplasma or any of those, coryza. They're all capable of it. Some do it worse than others. Some of it depends on the competency of the immune system of the bird as to how much swelling will be there. So that's how you would do get this program started. And the other problem that lies there for everybody, commercial and otherwise, is the fact that if the antibody levels that are passed on from the dam to the offspring through the egg are not uniform, then they don't dissipate uniformly in the offspring. So I'll explain that. A base titer, when you do, let's use an ELISA titer because it's easy for me to do, the enzyme-linked immunosorbent assay test called ELISA, E-L-I-S-A, is a test where they'll take some blood from the bird, take the blood and separate it, and use part of the blood to mix with the antigen in these test wells that I talked about earlier, and look for positive and negative results, or look for a tidal level. And these will be read by a machine, and it'll give you, let's say, a 1 to 32, 1 to 64, 1 to 128. 1 to 32 would be suspect. You start to get up to 1 to 28, you start looking more positive. 256, which is twice the 128, would be considered positive. Then they go up to 512, and so on. If those titers in those offspring don't come down uniformly or as uniform as possible, then it's going to be almost impossible to get them vaccinated properly. The titer level will have to drop below a certain level in order for a vaccination of the progeny to take place effectively. So if you have a less uniform antibody level in the offspring, that means the chances of them becoming infected prior to vaccination could very well be greater than you'd like it to be. So it's not just the cost. It's the cost plus of the vaccines. It's the labor. It's the possibility that after you go through all of these things, because you don't have a method of measuring it like the commercial poultry industry does. They have it down to beyond the science. They know in every breeder flock, they know the ones that are going to give them trouble. They go in and they try to reboost breeder flocks. At least that's what they did before. They may be doing something different now. But because this is a serious disease, this is a game changer. This is the difference between a lot of birds going in the condemn barrel in the processing plant, or going out to the supermarket or wherever they're going to be consumed by the public. So it's an extremely important disease to keep under control. And if you're not able to detect what the antibody level is going to be in the offspring, then you will not know when it's the proper time to vaccinate them. Vaccinate them when the titer of the bird, these levels that I'm talking about, 128, 256, 512, if they're too high, the vaccine that you're going to use on a progeny will not take. And when those antibody levels come down, so you vaccinated thinking everything's cool and your titers are way too high, when those titers do come down, if they are exposed on your farm or premise to a gum borer virus, they will come down with gum borer disease despite your best efforts. So it's not as easy as some people might think. This requires a lot of thought. It requires a lot of attention to detail, and I don't know how people would go about getting this done. I know of one person at this point that is vaccinating for gum borer disease and has been ill-advised on how to do that. This person is nowhere near the state of Washington or the state of California. And I see it as being done for absolutely no purpose other than a slick salesman told this person that this is what they should do. I just don't see it being of very much benefit at this point in time. And there's every possibility then that these vaccine strains from that could be spreading to other birds. They would have to take a look at that. But the way it works is trying to get the birds vaccinated prior to infection, just like you would with any other disease entity that you'd be dealing with, whether it be Merrick's. Here's a real kicker for you, okay? Merrick's is an immune-suppressing virus as well. So here you go. Now you got two of them. You got infectious bursal disease running around, and you got Merrick's running around. And you could have some birds with some severely impaired immune systems. And again, they're going to be just like humans that have an impaired immune system. They're going to catch everything that comes along, every cold, every fungus, every virus, every bacteria, constantly sick, can't make them healthy. You talk about failure to thrive. You haven't seen anything until you've seen this. I mean, this, and I'm not associating with failure to thrive. They're two different things, and we've discussed all of that before.
We have.
This is an extremely important thing. This is not something to be played with. This is not something to be taken seriously. So my best advice to people at this point in time is to know very well who you're buying from. And seek out the laboratories in your area and find out if they're capable of running these tests, find out what the costs are, and you might want to consider having birds tested prior to coming to your premises. I know people are going to balk and price and cost and everything else, but I'll tell you what, if you've got birds that are you've been breeding for 30 years and you bring in something from somebody else, I've seen it happen more times than you'd like to know. Laryngotracheitis is another one. I know it's a little off subject for this, but we've talked that one to death as well. And in some states, it is a test positive and destroy disease. You know, North Carolina.
That might be a good idea. A good idea that you said before they take the chicks home from Tractor Supply, before they go to the auction, before they go to the breeder, before they even put the first coop in the backyard. You know, maybe look around and see, okay, is there a certified avian vet in the area? Is there the poultry lab nearby? Is there a university that specializes in poultry where I can take my birds to? And if something should happen, what is my plan of action? And in my area here locally, what's available to me before I get these chickens down the road? So you know.
Exactly.
Just like having a not just a first aid kit. Everybody gets so caught up out there, first aid kit, and it's the first aid, you know, the medical kit as well, you know, or the medicine kit. So people think, oh, yeah, I got the gauze and the sprays and the VetRx and the Neosporin and stuff, but do you have the medicine to give them, the injections, the oral medication, the medication for water if something should happen as well?
Yeah, you know, it's... The big deal here is if I were going to go out here and get some birds and raise them up to sell birds and that kind of thing, I would want to make friends with my poultry laboratory. You don't necessarily have to make friends with your state veterinarian, but you should make friends, I think, with a person who's running a laboratory where they will do the diagnostic work. As I know, some states, they're not heavy poultry states, you might have a problem with that. But, you know, an ag extension agent can go a long way in helping you find the things that you need. You know, we've talked about it before. Some labs are better than others. Some labs are friendlier than others. Some labs, it appears, at least on the surface, that in some laboratory settings, it seems like all they want to do is destroy your birds. That is has always been the approach that most of these places will take with diseases like this. In this particular case, putting birds down and repopulating to me would be foolish. Okay. This is not the same as depopulating for mycoplasma and cleaning up. I have done that. I have one situation underway now where we're going to do it again. And if the people that are involved follow all of the protocols that are being set up, they should be successful like the people that I've helped prior to this. It can be done. This is different. This is tough. This is not easily disinfected against. Okay, this is a lot different. Can it be done? Yep, but most of us haven't got enough money in our pockets to do it. It takes time, it takes tenacity, leaving no stone unturned, because the first little thing you forget to do starts the process all over again, and you'd have to have a methodology. You see, you can buy the antigen for testing for MG. You can learn to do it yourself. It's like falling off a log. It doesn't require a machine to read it. It requires your eyeball and the proper antigen and the proper technique. And there isn't anybody with a functioning brain that I couldn't teach within 20 minutes to a half an hour how to do the MG test. It's that easy. Maybe even less if they're really astute and pay attention. But this type of testing, just not something that you can do in your backyard. It just isn't. And, The the problems associated with it, are huge, And we, like I said, we've seen it with LT. I've seen flocks years back. I know a person down in Texas, and I said this before on the show, had sent some birds to a neighbor down the road. Birds started dying. The neighbor called the health department. They came in and took some birds to the lab. They had LT. So wanted to know where he bought them, right back to his place. And he was allowed to save some eggs because it doesn't transmit through the eggs. But 30 years of breeding right down the drain. He saved some eggs, and then they come in, and they put them all down, every one of them. So don't think it can't happen. And what I fear out of this is that if this thing really takes a foothold and really gets a foothold in the fancy or the backyard crowd, you're going to see some restrictions that you're not going to like.
Right. I know that people are going to be surprised that just a second. Let me get off speaker and probably a little better sound. I know that a lot of people there in the chat room are talking about more commercial than backyard in nature and things like that, but I think a lot of people are going to be surprised this summer. And I was going to put it in the spring issue, but I really wanted more spring-oriented topics in the spring issue. So Dr. Patiski at UC Davis had already written the article on the very virulent bursal disease, and I don't have all the topics. I'm not going to say stuff that I don't know because I don't want to scare people, but he, I know this particular article will be in our summer issue, and it is about a strain that they found in California in urban backyards. They feel that it's elsewhere in the country, but people don't know to test for it because, like you're saying, it mutates or there's different strands and they're coming up, but they found one here at UC Davis that they found in urban backyards, pet chickens, if you will. I want to say that he said that there's no treatment for it as of right now. I don't know. I don't want to grasp for straws and scare people. And they think it's in other states, but other states don't look to know for it because it's so new or it's mutated and they don't have a test for it. But anyway, it's very interesting. I really wanted to put in the spring issue, but I wanted things more related to spring and first-timers and getting started. But it will be in our May. Summer issue comes out in May. Our summer issue, so folks historically probably yes, commercial, but that doesn't mean, like Peter said, can't find it in your backyard. Anything that's in the commercial, you can kind of find it in your backyard. That reminds me of a story too, Peter. When they had that big egg recall, 500 million eggs recalled and whatnot, and I went on Fox and CNN, and when I got done doing all those reports, a lot of people wanted me to get on and say, look, your backyard birds are safer, all this kind of stuff. I even got an email and a phone call. Hate them, love them, I've got my own opinion about them. Humane Society of the United States, Wayne, the CEO of that, he's like, what are you talking about? There's no studies that show backyard eggs and chickens are healthier and safer. That doesn't exist. You need to send me some if you have some, Wayne. And he sent me about 8 studies in my email box. I take that back. Not a single one was done in the United States, and not a single one was backyard. It was pasture-raised on a commercial farm or a large farm, but none of it was strictly just a backyard study. I said, yeah, I'd be more than happy to get on the rooftop, jump up and down, and spread all this news everywhere if you had something I could share that was legitimate. But none of the studies were done in the U.S., none were in the, say, backyard setting. So I can't just go on Fox News nationwide and just say something that's not true. I would lose all credibility. But the story that's coming up in our summer issue talks about it in more detail on this new possible strand that they found, very virulent strand. And I remember on the phone saying that they found it in California, backyard flocks, and they feel it's elsewhere, but they just don't know to test for it. So you'll have to wait a little bit. I don't know all the details and don't want to play scare tactics, talk about something I have no idea what it is, this guy.
Well, you're right on the money, and that's what brought this to the forefront approached by this person about giving some information and wanting to know as much as they could know about this disease. I think the thing, I don't think you have to know that it's a Burna virus. I don't see where that does anybody any good. If you're in the laboratory dealing with this thing every day, you already know that, and all of the ins and outs of what that tag for this particular virus means. But for the average person, backyard flock holder, I think what you need to know is that you don't want this. It's not just in the commercial poultry industry. N-O-T, with a big N-O-T, capital letters, it could be coming to a backyard near you. You just don't know it. And I don't think that, maybe for the moment, this is being confined to predominantly the commercial industry, but it's not the commercial industry per se. In other words, this is not rampant bursal disease of the virulent or virulent type throughout the industry. This is a little different virus that is what they mean by virulent. This is more invasive. This is the equivalent of putting your finger on a hot stove and burning it versus putting your face on it. Big difference. It's the only way. It's the only way to tell you. I mean, it's shock therapy, whatever. This is the only way to make anybody understand the difference. It's the difference between putting your finger on a hot burner on a stove and pulling it away and say, ow, versus having your face put on it and held there for a minute or two, and the big difference. And that's where this is. This is not something to be taken lightly, although I know folks will. That's just the general nature of people. But I wouldn't be on here talking about it if I didn't think it was important. I've heard about it before. It's nothing new to me, but it's just one of those things that left unchecked, this will be everywhere and anywhere. And again, how did it get here? This is a disease that has been prevalent in Asia, Southeast Asia, Europe, places like that. And it makes me wonder about, did it travel over here on a bird or eggs or whatever that people have either brought into this country illegally or somehow? I don't know. I'm not trying to blame them. I'm looking for answers, too, just like anybody else is. This is something that is, it really, the earlier a bird is exposed, and I want to make this perfectly clear, the earlier that a bird is exposed, the greater the damage. Okay? It's because early on, the immune system is just getting going. The B and T cells are starting to be produced. There's not any great number of them in the beginning. So if you mess up that bursa fibrosis in the very beginning, now you're going to get B and T cells that are not going to be able to do their job, and you're going to get a whole lot of them versus having a whole lot that are able to do their job in a bursa that's not been compromised. So it's extremely important. This is a disease of young birds more so than it is older birds, because we know that the bursa dissipates as the bird matures. And the older the bird is before it's infected, the less damage will be done. But still, if the bursa is there and still producing B and T cells, you're still going to have some bursal damage done and some damage done to the immune system. This is not a thing where you're going to be able to go and get antiviral drugs for your birds and take it away or mitigate it to some degree like we're able to do at least at this point in some humans. This is here to stay once it gets in your shorts, and you're not going to like it, and the cost of controlling it down the road is going to be monumental and huge. So I just think it's just a lot smarter to be taking a look at this thing now, and I'm going to start recommending to people who are messaging me and everything else that are having problems with birds that have specific symptoms that may apply to this, that maybe they ought to take a look at it. Rule it out. Better to be rule it out than find out that you've got a big problem with it.
Better to get it out. Absolutely. Yep. And, you've come on now for several years, and a lot of the these things, symptoms are the same from this, that, or the other. And so it's interesting, at least the initial onset of signs and symptoms. And then all of a sudden you may treat and it doesn't work and go to the next step. Or later on, the signs and symptoms may become a lot different based on a disease or virus that they may have. So it's pretty interesting. So anything else you'd like to share? We got some time, but if you're wrapped up, that is good. We took a lot of notes and a lot of good information. Again, there'll be an article in the summer issue of Chicken Whisperer Magazine about this. And
What I will do over the next week or so, I will put together a vaccination program. you know, that people who are interested may want to at least take a look at, so that we have something prepared should this become a bigger problem. Because I can tell you, if they find it in Washington, they're going to find it somewhere else. And, it would be interesting to read this article written by this veterinarian in California, who obviously has a lot of experience with this particular strain of this disease. And look, they wouldn't be spending a lot of time, effort, and money chasing this thing, trying to figure it all out, if it weren't important. Okay, so I mean, one thing that I note that I do know about it, again, I said this earlier, but I'll say it again, it's interesting that it is a bigger problem in laying type birds. And guess what? Most people who have small flocks and most people who are raising birds to show have egg laying type birds. So it's going to affect you more so. Is that because of the particular strains? My hunch is that in the commercial side, that it again, and I said this before, that the broiler crew has a somewhat different vaccination program, in my opinion. At least that's the way it used to be, and because they cannot stand it in those young birds at all. If the commercial egg-laying folks are buying, you know, pullets from somebody else and then putting them in their houses, you know, who knows what the vaccination program was, how well it was done, how much blood work was done to see, you know, what the tidal levels were, how even they were. There's a lot that goes into it. There really is. And, you know, I'm all ears, and I'll be listening and looking for that article, and I've already got some feelers out on my end here to folks that are in the know here. Anything that I get, you know, next week, we can still report a little bit on this if it's necessary.
Okay.
We'll just see where it all goes.
Yeah, as soon as I get it, even before it goes to print and all that, as soon as I get it, I'll forward it over to you so you can you can read it and get some information on it. I'll even see if I can get it a little bit earlier, because I'm pretty sure it is completely done. But nonetheless, I'll get it to you as soon as I can.
You know, here's another thing, food for thought for people. You know, we had talked when we talked about failure to thrive, when we talked about probiotics and their effect on the immune system and how much of the immune system of the bird lies within the intestinal tract. This is where the bursa and the thymus gland, okay, which are parts of the immune system, which include the spleen, the Hodgkin gland, the cecal tonsils of the bird, and the gut-associated lymphoid tissue, what we've talked about, the GALT, these are responsible for helping the bursa fibrosis and the thymus and everything make these, what they call, embryonic stem cells. And from there, they make them into competent immune cells. And when this bursa is under attack by this virus, this is not going to happen as frequently. It may not happen at all. Or they may be poor quality B and T cells, and affect the ability of these birds to fight off any infection that comes along. So don't want to belabor the point too much, but the more people know about it, the better off they're going to be. And it's just to me, it's important. And you know, when I had known about it in California, and I know they've been dealing with it there for some 6-7 years or so, and it's amazing in a way that they've been able to just hold it really in California. But I can tell you, they're not spending this money chasing this thing around for nothing. They know it's serious. And, we'll keep an eye on it, and we'll try to keep everybody as informed as we can.
Sounds like a plan. We appreciate it. We appreciate you coming on, Peter. That is awesome information, as always. And I don't have my schedule in front of me. So, again, just like today, we'll play it by ear. If we happen to be parked somewhere, if we happen to be actually on the road somewhere, if we happen to be on this tour that we're going on, I will let you know and update you quite a bit, let you know when what shows we'll be at. Maybe we'll have to reschedule one for a different day, but I'll get with you off air and let you know my schedule when I think we may or may not have a Monday show. So I appreciate you coming on, and we'll see you soon, I'm sure, over the next few weeks.
Okay, my pleasure.
All right, thank you so much. All right, folks, that's Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor, founder of FirstStateVetSupply.com. Visit them online, won't you? Again, that's FirstStateVetSupply.com. vetsupply.com. We often say if they don't have it, you don't need it. Lots of great stuff over there. And he's got an emergency medicine kit to go along with your first aid kit. It's very affordable, $24.95. And the cool part about it is instead of buying an entire bottle of a medication, it's a smaller bottle. Why? If you have it on hand, which is good to have, and you don't use it, which is a good thing, the whole bottle that you bought, which has an expiration date, when it goes bad, you didn't have just all this money invested. So you can get this emergency medicine kit, $24.95, has most everything you would need for an outbreak of whatever in your backyard. You can start treatment, get diagnosis, start treatment, and then whatever you're using, you can order more. So that way, if something goes bad, it's just a few cc's versus, you know, mini cc's or a whole bottle that you just spent $30 on a bottle, one bottle, and then you don't use it. That's a great thing, but it's all gone bad. So this is one thing Peter's done is he's put together this emergency medicine kit for you that has smaller amounts of many different medications. So if you don't have to use it, which is a great thing, you don't lose all that money. Then if you start using it and say, hey, I need some more of this, you can order what you need and not all of everything that you don't need. So how cool is that? And it comes with a boatload of directions on how to use everything in the kit for your small backyard flock. $24.95, bam. And you're taken care of. Not going to find it anywhere else either. Nowhere. FirstStateVetSupply.com. So keep that in mind. Also, if you haven't already, please enter our March Ultimate Chicken Coop Contest. It is brought to you by Wooden-Wonders.com. In fact, I just got over the script from them regarding their commercial that we're going to be putting together. So I'll just read that to you right now. Wooden Wonders designs and builds Hobbit Hole-style playhouses, chicken coops, and pet houses, as well as larger custom designs for a wide variety of possible uses, including garden sheds, cottages, saunas, and studios. Their unique Hobbit Hole design with round windows and door and a curved roof will beautify and add value to your landscape. Handmade in Maine, each Hobbit Hole is expertly crafted using only the finest quality materials and building techniques and is finished to your specifications. Their custom cedar clapboard roofing adds an additional touch of rustic beauty to the design. Wooden Wonders has three sizes of chicken coops available to accommodate just a few birds or up to a flock of 30, and each is available with an attached run. They ship all of their products in the lower 48 states of the U.S., all products are available as a kit and can come fully assembled. You have to see them to understand how special these coops really are. So go to their website, www.wooden-wonders.com. That's www.wooden-wonders.com. And take a look at some of the images and information. Or you can give them a call. Call Melissa and Rocky at 855-462-2484, wooden-wonders.com. So we've got to produce that commercial later today, but during the show today I did get that script. And if you want to know how to enter that awesome coop contest, you can head right on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/thechickenwhisperer, and enter the contest. You may have a Hobbit Hole delivered to your front door if you win the contest. How cool is that? All right, that's going to wrap up another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Remember, if you joined us late, no worries. You can listen to the archive 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. In fact, there's over 900 archived episodes. Any chicken topic you want to hear about. Just blogtalkradio.com, iTunes, podcast.com, Zoom.com, all of them carry us. Got to love it. And we hope to see you on the Chicken Whisperer Tour. So, and you'll get updates while we're on tour, what shows will be broadcast, what won't. Maybe there'll be some special shows in the evening when we're parked and not actually moving from an event to event. And we hope you do that. So thanks for tuning in today, and I hope you have a wonderful Monday. And hopefully we'll see you tomorrow at 12 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here on Blog Talk Radio. God bless everybody. Thanks for joining us. Ha ha ha.